originating from our Jimmy John's of Lexington studios. This is Jock Talk, presented by Tito's Handmade Vodka on the Horse Racing Radio Network. An intimate, in-depth discussion with the best jockeys in thoroughbred racing.
25-year-old Mario Gutierrez, who took Derby 1:38.
Digging down for the final 16th under Victor Espinosa.
Joe Calamo in the ride of his life, in the race of his life.
Gary Stevens, 3 Preaknesses.
A brilliant ride by Calvin Burrell.
Up the inside under Johnny Velasquez to take it.
Shanghai Bobby and Rosina Pradnik come again to beat. He's had enough.
Raji Barrage aboard, crushing the field here.
Perfectly ridden by Javier Castellano. A scintillating performance under Rafael Bejarano.
Now here's Christina McManigal.
Hello again, everyone. Welcome to Jock Talk, presented by Tito's Handmade Vodka, right here on the Horse Racing Radio Network. I'm your host, retired jockey Christina McManigal. I'm joining you this evening from our Jimmy John's of Lexington, Kentucky studio, and I would like to thank everyone listening tonight on Sirius 219 XM 206, and also to those of you listening to our website at horseracingradio.net. A portion of the proceeds from this show go to the Permanently Disabled Jockeys Fund. We've heard so many stories here on Jock Talk of riders who have given everything to the sport, and they need financial assistance for medical bills, rent, you name it. They need our help, so please visit the website at www.pdjf.org. So I'm very excited about the show this evening. To put it simply, my guest is a walking miracle. He survived horrific injuries, and now he's one of the top agents in Maryland. He was also a very accomplished rider. He rode the likes of Captain Bodgett. He rode in the 98 Preakness, and he has 1,223 victories to his name. Frank Douglas, welcome to the show.
Oh, thank you very much for having me on your show. I'm very happy to be with you guys, and thank you for getting me in here.
It's a funny story, Frank. I originally tried to get your jock on the show, Horacio Caramanos, and you keep him so busy, he didn't have time to do it today. So I thought, what better than to have the agent, Frank Douglas, here on the show, because you have a pretty incredible story yourself, Frank, and I can't wait to hear all about it. And you are from Panama, correct?
Yes, Panama City, Panama. They got the canal down there, so I guess you guys know good joggers that come up from that school of riding. I came to the United States in 1981, and then from then on, I came to Maryland, and I stayed there for all my career, and I really liked it very much.
What was it like growing up in Panama, Frank? Were you raised around the horses, or how did you come about the racetrack?
Well, my grandfather was a trainer in Panama, and I decided to join the jockey colony. I went to the jockey school for a year in Panama, and believe it or not, I won my first race when I rode in Panama, and I was very excited for that, and I decided to hit the United States to come to ride over here, and I got a lot of people to help me out, and I came to Maryland and really, really enjoyed our stay in Maryland the whole time.
So you went to the jockey school there in Panama. That's a pretty prestigious program. So many great riders have come from that school, and you went there for a year. What was it that they taught you there?
Well, they how you first how you take care of the horse mainly, and then they give you the ins and out of the teaching how to ride the races, and after that we all the bucks, the apprentice in this case, that's what they call it, the jockeys, the bucks, they ride one race for when they graduated, and I rode with all the bucks in my class, and I won that race. And at the beginning, I thought it was going to be easy, you know. So, well, you know, I'm going to win my first race. I'm going to leave the United States. It wasn't that easy. I should have stayed a little longer in Panama, but Then I learned ins and outs here in the United States, and I learned language, obviously, and the rest is history.
The rest is history. Mm-hmm. How many kids are in your class?
They all depend. You know, we started here with 100, and then start moving out, you know, just in the last, the longest. And in my year, we graduated almost 17 riders, and you know, we made two races out of that. So two races were for apprentice riders. And now actually, the name of the academy now, they changed the name about 10 years ago to La Fipincay. Obviously, mm-hmm. La Fipincay Jr. was jockey from Panama.
Right.
That was run in California. He's in the Hall of Fame, obviously. And when he retired, they named that school the La Fipincay Junior School. So now it's a little different. Now it's 2 years to graduate, but they're still coming out of the jockey school pretty much without the teaching English and all that stuff in case you want to come to the United States. So that's a plus.
Oh, that's very good. So you came to the U.S. You already spoke English.
Yeah, I knew a little bit, and then just got to practice it, and over the years, I got better and better, and now I'm an agent.
Now you're an agent. You talk for a living, right?
Yes.
So, in your class, were there any riders we would be familiar with here in the States?
Of course, Alex Solis, recently retired. He was running California. Graduated with me, and Omar Klingler, he's a jockey from Maryland. He retired also now. The one rider still active is Alciaras Cortez. He still runs in Maryland. But then again, you know, this business is you gotta fight your weight was one thing, and all the other things, your injuries. So, like, if you get injured, you know how you can't run anymore. Well, you gotta find something else to do. But the weight is a big problem. Because a certain weight that you have to carry on the horses. And if you cannot do the weight anymore, then you got to find something else.
It's a very tough game, Frank. Alex Solis, it's funny you mentioned that name. We'll talk about Alex Solis later when we talk about Captain Bodgett. But
yes.
You mentioned the weight and the injuries, and obviously, as we will also learn about later on in the show, you had so many horrific injuries that happened to you. But the weight, did you have a hard time with your weight starting out?
No, when you're like when you were young, your weight's pretty much light, obviously. But then the years come around, and obviously we always eat more, and your body don't assimilate so much of the calories that you make or you eat, per se. But this... there's a lot of stuff you do that, you know, exercising plus getting a horse in the morning. And obviously the dread of getting the hot box. The hot box, you know, you lose weight. You know, before you ride the race, you can lose between 1 pound to 7 or 8 pounds. And in some cases, just to make the race and just to ride the race. And, but if you can handle that, and then you can have a long career. And in my case, you know, my weight was very controlled. Obviously, I did use the hot pots a few times, but you know, at the end, it was just the injuries got the best of me.
Right,
and that's why I had to retire. Yeah,
I understand that, Frank. I understand that. Mm-hmm. What? How old were you then when you graduated from the school?
Believe it or not, I was 17, but there were jockeys younger than me in there, because in Panama, you can run when you're 14 years old. I mean, the younger, the better in Panama. Then I was 17. I came to the United States right after that, and I rode a few racetracks. I rode Charlestown, and then I rode Pennsylvania. But finally, I moved to Maryland, and, you know, it was you know, the hum of the Preakness, and I said, I like it here, I'm going to stay in Maryland, and I did, and I met my wife, and I got married, and I had two kids, and I had a home, and I loved it. I just love Maryland.
Maryland's great, and what did your family think in Panama when you first announced that you would be moving to the States?
Well, my mother, first of all, she liked me to be a jockey because it's dangerous of the sport. Mm-hmm. But, you know, that's what I wanted. That's what I like to do. And like I said, I won my first race, and I don't know if it was a good thing or bad thing to do it, but I was looking for my passport to go to the United States right away. And I got lucky enough that I got a contract from a trainer from Charleston. He brought me over here, and then I moved around. And like I said, it was a good experience, you know, riding in the United States with the top riders. And never got better in the craft, and I got to start riding better horses. And you just said early in the show that I won the 1,200 races. You know, that was a big accomplishment. You know, it's like a milestone. When you pass 1,000, that's a lot of horses that you ride, you know.
Absolutely. So, who had your contract at Charlestown?
William Goff. He passed away about 20 years ago. But I was very happy that he accepted me as his rider. And I was riding all his horses at the time. And then after that, I decided to get out of the contract and I moved up to the East Coast. I went to Philadelphia Park at the time. And I finished my bug there, and I moved to Maryland after that. And I stay here.
Frank, we've had several riders on the show who talked about having a contract with a trainer. And these days you don't see that. It doesn't happen anymore. But you just mentioned getting out of the contract. And I'm not familiar with how do you do that?
Well, if somebody kind of buy the contract per se, it's like the sports and the sports like football or baseball, and you got to get traded. It's almost the same thing. The only difference is that it's one person that got your contract or your papers in this case. When I got out of the contract, then when I got my citizenship in the United States, and then about 5 years after that, I became a citizen. And then I became an American citizen, and I have no problem, you know, getting in another country. But it's a little hassle. Nowadays, you have to have a work permit, and you got to hire your lawyer and all that stuff, and then they take you to the routine to get your papers in order, because you need to have the papers in order to ride in the United States. You have to be legal, per se.
Right, that has to be a pretty complicated process, but I do want to ask you this too, Frank. Charlestown, I've ridden at Charlestown several times, and I would have to imagine that if I ship to the United States for the first time and I'm just starting out at this bull ring, that had to be quite a shock, I suppose, going from Panama to riding in this very small racetrack, the bull ring of Charlestown. What was that like?
Well, the only difference that was in that case, because there were three jockeys from Panama riding in Charleston at the time, that at least they could accommodate me into their homes to stay there and go to work in the morning. And I said, well, I'll go to Charleston and I start there just because there are people that I know. I could have people in New York or people in Philadelphia or Maryland, but since it was Charleston, I said, well, I'm going to try it. And I think I'm a sure accident in there just because, like you say, it's a bull ring and it's a little different than a big track per se. But you learn the ins and outs, like I said, little by little, and I got better at it. And it was time for me to move on, and I did. And I'm really happy that I learned there. I went back to Charleston a few times to ride there when I was in Maryland. But in this business, like you said, you know, and you can't worry about the accidents. You got to ride your race and worry about your horses. Accidents are going to happen, believe it or not. You don't want accidents to happen, but, you know, somebody else can fall in front of you and you can fall behind. And it's like driving a car. You never know. You never know what's going to happen, but it's something I really like to do. I love it to the end. I still love it, but, you know, obviously I can't ride anymore. But I like what I do. I'm a jockey agent. You know. I like to look for miles for the riders that I work for.
Keeps you in the game, right, Frank? And you do. You have to love it, because Chris McCarron always used to tell me it's not if, it's when you're going to get hurt. And you can't think about it, because then you ride scared and then you're going to have more accidents when you're riding like that. So it's definitely a dangerous job, but we do love it.
Yeah, Doug, you just mentioned that if you're afraid of a jockey from Panama, Hall of Fame rider Jacinto Vasquez, told me at the end of his career when he came to Maryland to ride for this last year that he rode, he told me, if you ever get afraid on horses, you better quit, because that's something that you don't want to have in your conscience, that you're going to fall tomorrow or today or whatever. You'll be worried about it all the time. And in our career, you can't worry about that stuff, because it can happen in the morning, it can happen in the afternoon, it can happen between the race or before the race, for that matter. But as long as you love it and you like it, just keep on doing it.
Jockey agent Frank Douglas is joining me tonight on Jock Talk, presented by Tito's Handmade Vodka, right here on the Horse Racing Radio Network. So, Frank, you rode at Charlestown. That had to turn you into a very good gate rider, I would assume. You have to break sharp out of the gate there, going 4.5 furlongs. And you went to Pennsylvania, and then you decided to stay in Maryland. And you mentioned it's the home of the Preakness, of course. But what else was it about Maryland that convinced you to stay?
Well, a lot of the people. We have in the 80s, at the beginning of the 80s, you know, we used to have, it was Tomico, Laurel, and Bowie, and also Timonium, which was a small track like Charleston. We still run there in the summer, at the end of the summer, for 7 days. And I like that you can move from this racetrack to racetrack and with different experiences and trainers. And the colony of the riders that were here, they were, at the time when I was here, it was Edgar Prado, it was just becoming a phenomenon in racing. And obviously, you know, he still rides and he's in the Hall of Fame. But at the time when he came, he was pretty young, and we saw him, I rode with him a lot of years, and it was hard to beat him, you know. And it's still the same also. At the time was Ken DeSarmo and another Hall of Famer, rider, and Chris Antri was in Maryland also. I mean, there's a lot of riders that came out of here. And it's still a very tough colony, per se, but a lot of people think, oh, we got to go to New York, or we got to go to Florida or California to get a name on yourself. But, you know, when you get to Maryland, you know, you can get your feet, you know, in the business and your name in the business, and then you can get recognized. And obviously, like, it's like baseball. Then you can go to New York or California or Florida, for that matter, and ride the big horses and the big races, because that's what you want to do eventually. In my case, you know, I was happy where I was, and like you mentioned, I rode Captain Budgie, one of the best horses I ever rode, and I was very happy with that. And I rode the Preakness in 1998, like you said, and I was very happy for that too, and something that I always wanted to do, and I did it. I was very, very happy that I did it, at least in my career. It's not easy to do that.
You've accomplished a lot, Frank, and you mentioned so many big names riding there in Maryland at the time when you arrived: Edgar Prado, Kent DeSormo, Chris Antley. And you had to learn so much by riding with so many accomplished riders, but did any of them kind of take you under their wing and show you the ropes?
Well, the Edgar, like I said, Edgar is a very talented rider. I never know, like, to ask too much, but I always look at the way they rode, and you learn something every day in this business, you know, whether you ride or you see the horses that you ride. Because a lot of jockeys came in this area that I learned from, and it's hard to figure them out, but they were very, very talented riders. Obviously, there was one that escaped my mind, and I remember it was Ramon Dominguez, and he also retired because of a head injury, and he became a Hall of Famer last year himself. Mm. And that was another jockey that he's in New York now. I think he's doing some different things, but also, he's helped the Disabled Riders Fund, so he's always connected with racing. But that's another rider that he was on top of the game, and he got injured and he had to retire for that reason. Unfortunately, well, no run anymore, but he's alive and he's doing something for the business, which is helping the disabled riders, and I'm very happy for that, for him.
Ramon Dominguez, one of the best in the business. And Frank, you're doing a lot too. You've had, as I mentioned, some pretty horrific injuries, and let's touch on that now a little bit. You mentioned all of the different racetracks there in Maryland: Bowie, Pimlico, Laurel, and Timonium. Timonium was actually the place of your worst injury, and Timonium's a funny place because I remember the first time I rode there. You're going down the backside, and all of a sudden, there's a Ferris wheel in the background. It's kind of crazy, but fun place to ride. And tell us what happened to you there in Timonium.
Timonium is a funny place. You know, it's the summer. A lot of people come in there. They got the fair in there at the same time. And I always like to ride there. My action occurred when I was going like to the backside and going to that turn. I was bumped by another horse and I clipped heels. In other words, I grabbed another horse legs in front of me. And the problem was not falling, because when I fell, nothing happened. The problem happened was the horse behind me came and struck me in the head with I got my helmet on, but it struck me. And I was in a coma for a couple of days. And when I recovered, or wake up, I was in the hospital. And I couldn't believe what happened. I couldn't remember. And I stayed there for a little while and I did my therapy. And one day they told me, said, well, what are you going to do now? I said, well, I'm going to go back riding. I said, no, you can't ride again. I said, well, I'm going to ride again. And I rode the Preakness in 1998 because my accident happened in 97. And 6 months later, I came back to the saddle and I started winning again. Mm-hmm. And like I told you at the beginning, you have to love this business to do what you do in order to keep on doing it. You don't have to come back if you don't want to, or you're scared or whatever. But at the time, man, I wasn't scared. I just wanted to keep on riding, keeping my career, you know, whatever I had. I ended up running at least 5 more years after that. And then again, my last accident was I broke my ankle. And at the time, I was 42 years old. And I said, well, you know, I think it's time. I think it's time. I was going to try to come back, believe it or not. But a couple of agents told me, so, oh, why don't you become an agent? You're good at it. And they told me, so take Horacio Caramanos. I said, no, I can't take him. He's a leading rider here in Maryland. I can't. Well, I retired and I took his book, and I still with him.
The rest is history.
I still his agent.
So it's so funny to me, because when I called you yesterday, and you know, I've known you for a long time, and when I wrote in Maryland and I said, Frank, I said, I'm making a comeback. I want you to take my book. And you laughed and you said that I was crazy. But you, sir, are even crazier, because you almost died at Timonium and you still came back. Like, that's crazy. That is crazy.
Well, in my case, I know it was bad and all that, but I didn't see it that way. I saw it like just an accident, like a normal accident, and I got to come back. Something was telling me to come back, and not because of that. But I came back and rode the Preakness, and it was something that they had to, I had to get it done. I had to get it on my book, my bucket list. In that case, that I rode the Preakness, and then finally I did it. And then after that, well, I had a couple of accidents in between, but yeah, like I said, the last one in 03. I think it was time for me to hang my tag and say, you know what, I got to become an agent, because, you know, if I want to come out in one piece, I'm going to do something else that I like in the business, which is being an agent. And I'm glad I did, believe it or not, even though you still want to get back on the horse and ride. But I think the time passed. It's not the same. Your reflex is not the same. you know, you got to do something else, like any other sport. You got to find something else to do.
But you found something good, Frank, most definitely. And after that horrific spill at Simonium, you say you don't remember anything of the spill. And do you think that's a good thing that you can't remember that?
Yeah, per se. I saw the replay of the race, you know, the what occurred. But you don't want to bring back memories. I did it just for the fact that I couldn't remember what happened. But I only saw it one time, and that was it. But even though I came back to ride, everybody was telling me that well, it was a bad accident, it was a bad thing that happened to you. Why you want to come back to ride? Even the people at Timonium, the management asked me, and you sure you want to come back to Timonium to ride? And I told them yes. They did a big thing for me at the racetrack, and They give the Frank Douglas Day, for that matter, and they give me a trophy and all that. And I ended up winning races in there, but believe it or not, the next year. Because it was a horrific accident in front of a lot of people. And they flew me in a helicopter out of there on top of that. Mm. And people wanted to see that was still good. And I did win races in there again.
That's awesome, Frank. Do they still have that Frank Douglas Day?
Well, they did that one time.
No, just one time.
I was very happy they did that.
Yeah.
The famous Jim McKay came to Timonium and gave me a trophy.
Wow.
They invited him personally to give me, and that was a big plus because you know I see the man every time he came to the pregnancy, but I never couldn't believe that he was gonna come give me a trophy in the winner's circle that day, and I was very happy for that too.
Well, folks, we will continue our visit with Frank Douglas after this short commercial break. Stay with us. You're listening to Jock Talk, presented by Tito's Handmade Vodka, right here on the Horse Racing Radio Network.
Hi, I'm Tito Beveridge, founder and master distiller of Tito's Handmade Vodka, America's original craft vodka. I believe in the craft process of distilling in batches using old-fashioned pot stills, and that's the way we still make Tito's Handmade Vodka today. We even won the World Spirits Competition, double gold, unanimous judge's choice. Tito's Handmade Vodka is made from 100% corn, so it's naturally gluten-free. For recipes, videos, and more, visit titosvodka.com. 80 proof Tito's Handmade Vodka, 5th Generation Inc., distilled and bottled in Austin, Texas.
Being a jockey may be one of the more dangerous professions in all of sports. In a split second, you can go from the top of the standings to never being able to stand again. I'm Mike Pena, and over the years, I've had the privilege of talking with many of the top jockeys in thoroughbred racing. And to a person, they will tell you that on any given day, before any given race, when they get a leg up, there's no guarantee they'll return the way they left. It's simply the reality of being a jockey. The Permanently Disabled Jockeys Fund does amazing work, providing financial assistance to some 60 former jockeys who have suffered catastrophic on-track injuries. Since its founding 10 years ago, the PDJF has disbursed over $7 million to permanently disabled jockeys. And I'm proud to say that the PDJF is the official charity of the Horse Racing Radio Network, but the only way they can continue helping those disabled riders who have given our sport so much is through your generosity and support. So I encourage you to visit pdjf.org and start making a difference today.
This is CJ Johnson with your Jockey Talk 360 weekly update. Javier Castellano edged Belmont Stakes winning rider Jose Ortiz by a single point, 50-49, to win the Eddie Arcaro Award as the Belmont Stakes Racing Festival's top rider. Among his victories were the Grade 1 Longines Just a Game with Antono and the Grade 2 Brooklyn with War Story. Castellano finished the week with 6 wins, 8 seconds, and 3 third place finishes. Jose Ortiz also had a great week at Belmont as he upset the Manhattan aboard Ascend and earned his first Triple Crown race win in the Belmont Stakes aboard Taprit. Ortiz led North America in earnings and finished in the money on 53% of his mounts from 8 wins, 8 seconds, and 3 third place finishes. Finally, the Jockeys Guild Jockey of the Week, Mike Smith, proved once again why he is the best big money rider in the game. Smith won 5 stakes races on Saturday, including 3 Grade 1s. Smith won the Easy Goer aboard West Coast, the Grade 1 Acorn aboard Abel Tasman, the Grade 1 Ogden Phipps aboard Songbird, the Grade 2 Woody Stevens aboard American Anthem, and the Grade 1 Met Mile aboard More Spirit. Smith finished the week with 5 wins, 1 second, and 1 third place finish. John Parada's newest book, Half a Chance, is available now at jockeytalk360.com and for Kindle at amazon.com. Half a Chance is the story of a down-on-his-luck jockey agent who finds himself entangled in a web of deceit and larceny and provides the kind of entertaining read that is ideal for any horse racing fan. Visit jockeytalk360.com for more information. This has been CJ Johnson with your Jockey Talk 360 weekly update. For all the latest news in the jockey world, visit jockeytalk360.com and follow us on Twitter at Jockey Talk.
This is Jock Talk on the Horse Racing Radio Network, presented by Tito's Handmade Vodka.
Welcome back to Jock Talk, presented by Tito's Handmade Vodka. I'm your host, Christina McManigle, and I am joined tonight by Frank Douglas. And Frank, prior to the break, we were talking about your horrific injury at Timonium, and you made a comeback, miraculously, and you rode in the 1998 Preakness, something that you said you would, that was on your bucket list. Many riders have that on their bucket list to ride in the Triple Crown races, and you also rode a very talented horse by the name of Captain Bodget, and that's a pretty interesting story, and Captain Bodget was trained by Gary Capuano. Tell us about how you first started getting on this horse.
I was like the owner of the horse, or different horses that he had. And she had a good eye with, to buying horses. And she bought this two-year-old, Neocala Fail. And when she brought us a two-year-old, I was walking him. And it was working very nice, very good. And I said, well, you know, like every other horse, every two-year-old is going to be a nice two-year-old. Believe it or not, the first race that he run, he finished third, and very good third. But the next race, he won five races in a row after that, including the stake. And then she was thinking about, you know, running the Triple Crown. She nominated for the Triple Crown. And the one race, she said, well, let's go to the Holy Bull Stakes in Gulfstream, and you're going to ride him because you won't find the horse, you know the horse. I said, well, no problem. I'll be happy to ride the horse for you. So, you know, you go to Gulfstream, you run against the best in the business. You know, Pat Bay, Jerry Bailey was in the race, Gary Stevens. And there was no problem for me because I rode with them over here at Pimlico before. And the horse won a great race, finished third. And the next day I heard that the owner ended up selling the horse that night to another owner that he wanted to have a horse for the Triple Crown. And I was grabbing the phone right away to try to get who bought the horse and all that stuff. And I kept the same trainer, Gary Capuano. I did call the trainer, and he gave me the bad news that obviously it was a Team Ballard that bought the horse, and they're going to require the services of one of the top riders in the country. At the time, they wanted to call Gary Stevens, but Gary Stevens couldn't ride him, so they decided to go with Alexis Solis, another Panamanian countryman that finished in the same school that year, back in 1980. And he ended up riding the horse and winning the Florida Derby and the Wood Memorial, and he ended up being the favorite in the Derby, and I was very happy that he was running in the Derby and also running with another friend of mine, Alex Solis. But he finished second in that race, and then he rode in the Preakness. He ended up third. But after the race, the horse, I did have a problem with the tendon. Mm. And after that, they decided to retire the horse and make it to the breeder, the breeding shed. But I was very happy that I got to ride the best horse in there, and I wish he would have won the Derby because it would have been something good for me. At least I rode the horse, but just in finishing second, it was good enough for me to say, well, at least I rode the horse, and I was very happy to get him where he ended up, and happy that he run the Preakness. Couldn't ride the Belmont because, you know, the tendon is something very fragile. You don't want to push the horse. And he made a couple of babies after that, but there wasn't too much success. But then again, you know, he had a good career in front of him, so that was good.
Was that hard for you? I would imagine it would have had to be hard watching the Derby that year, and you rode that horse, but you weren't on him. That had to be tough.
Yeah, of course. You know, when you, but in this case, I wasn't taking off because of the owner. It was because it was sold by another owner, mm-hmm. and the same trainer said, "Well, you know, they got to change riders," and I understand that. But you're right. You know, it's a little bit difficult. It's like you're driving a car and they take you off the car and then put it to somebody else.
Right.
And they win the Daytona 500 or something like that, you know. It's, mm-hmm. it's very hard. But it has happened in this business. You ride horses that you like and they want to get somebody else and not only jockey. And you're frustrated, but it's always happy when they do the opposite. They take it to somebody else and they give it to you. And you win the races, and you say, well, see how the other rider feels, you know? So in this business, you know, it's like that. There's some happy times and it's in unhappy times also. But you have to like it. Again, you have to like this business to do what you do, and it's the main thing, you know?
Very true. And you can't take things personal. Like you said, they sold the horse, and that was their decision, and you were able to ride the horse to much success prior to that. What was it like? You won the Grade 3 Laurel Futurity on the horse in 1996 there at Laurel Park. Was that your first graded victory?
Yes. I won stakes for my career, but the graded, when you win a graded, is something that you say, well, you know, it's one of the big stakes that I won, the Laurel Futurity at the time. But then again, you know, you every race that you win, say, it's going to be $5,000 stake. It's, you know, it's something that you make a big accomplishment. You say, well, I won the race, because it's a great feeling when you win. And to win the races that I won, and the other jockeys before and after me, they're going to be winning races, believe me. It's a great feeling winning a race, especially in a big day like the Preakness or the Belmont Stakes or the Derby, or the Breeders' Cup, for that matter. You know, it's a big, big accomplishment. I said, man, I'd be something great. And that's what I did, and I'm really happy for that.
When we mentioned earlier, you did ride in the Preakness. While you didn't win, you still had the opportunity to do that on the biggest day in Maryland. And what was that like?
Well, I tell you one thing. That day, you're a superstar. I mean, you're a star, but this day, you're a superstar because everybody wants to interview you. Everybody wants to talk to you. Everybody wants to get your autograph and take a picture with you. And even though, you go in the positive to go on the race and ride, you know, you always got to concentrate that you want to win the race, obviously. And that's what I was thinking. And when I broke out of that gate, the first name that they mentioned was Silver Prospect in front. I mean, that for me was like, I won the race already. But again, unfortunately, my horse stopped and, you know, but just to be in the race and put my name in the program or in the books and say I rode the Preakness, it's a big accomplishment and it's something nobody can take away from you. You know, you're there in the record books, like you rode the Preakness. And some of the jockeys have rode the Preakness or the Belmont or the Derby, but I don't know, for them probably be the same thing, you know, at least they rode the big race. But for me, you know, for a lot of for the races that I won and I can't complain, that was the biggest for me.
You were part of history. Real quiet
exactly.
One that day. That's
real quiet. Ken Nazarma, another guy that was in Maryland. He was I think he was a Hall of Famer already at the time, and he's still riding. And you know, he's very, very accomplished rider, obviously. And like I said, a lot of people came out of Maryland, and then they went to different racetracks and became famous. So it was a good thing that started here.
You accomplished a lot yourself, Frank, and you said earlier you had another spill where you fractured your ankle and you decided at that point, at that time in your life, it was time to trade in the riding boots for a condition book, and you became an agent. And what was that transition like?
They told me it was going to be difficult. Ex-riders, they're stewards now. They work in the racetrack as a stewards. They told me, I said, it's going to be difficult if you retire from riding. By the time I was 42, and I got my share of accidents, and I think, so you know what, it's time for me to hand the tag and become an agent, because, you know, you don't want to run the forever, and then you see the young generation coming up, and they're winning races, and then people that the owners and trainers, that's what they want. They want whoever's hot, whoever's winning more races, and that's what they're going to go for. If I would be riding, I would have ridden one or two horses a day, and I cannot make a living doing that. So I traded to become an agent, and I'm very successful now, and thank God that I got the rides that I have, and they're running pretty good. And as a matter of fact, we just went to Belmont, Belmont Steak Day. We were a horse called Recurrent Ready for Race of the Pass. He trains for On the Armor. And the horse won Preakness Day over here at Preakness, and they took him to the Woody Stevens in New York on Saturday, and he ran a great race. He finished third, but the horse ran a great race. And again, I like the, I see the horses now from outside the fence now, even though I don't run it, but I feel that I can run around the horse in a different way now as an agent and as a representative for the riders. And that's something that I'm very happy for now.
So you still get that rush, Frank, when you win a race, when one of your jocks wins a race?
Of course, even though, like I say, even though I'm not on the horse, I feel like, you know, that you know, we're making the right decisions, ride the horse, or to do the decisions that we make and ride and win. Caramanos, you know, he's a very talented rider, and we're riding a Laurel right now, and, you know, he's winning. He's up leading rider a Pimlico with my older rider, Kevin Gomez. They both end up leading riders. And it was a tie, and that's something that should be in the records, too, because I don't remember seeing an agent with both riders winning the title at Pimlico for the 12-day meet, and the both riders end up being leading riders. So that's another accomplishment that I should put in my bucket list, you know.
You should.
That's an agent. So,
still making history, Frank.
Yeah, I'm making history, right.
Now, we haven't had very many agents here on the show, so if you could, tell our listeners what exactly is involved with being a jockey's agent.
Well, the jockey agent literally is the representative of the jockeys. When the jockeys cannot say what races they're going to ride, because the riders really, they ride the horses. They don't have nobody, you know, booking mounts for them and taking just to ride the best horse in the race. So that's why they have an agent. The agent go talk to the trainer, and the trainer, they'll tell you what horse to ride, and then you as an agent decide to ride the best horse in the race. You decide for the rider, per se, and it's a good industry that we win right now, and if you're a good rider, you're going to be in demand. And also, you know, you gotta be positive, and you gotta be on top of the game at all times, because you know, there's so many racers in the United States and so many horses and trainers and jockeys that you have to know the ins and outs of the racing business. And also, obviously, the condition book is the main thing, because races are different in different racetracks. And a trainer asks you to find your race for the horse, you got to find one in a split second, and you got to tell them where to go, et cetera, et cetera. And in Maryland, you can have two professional riders and one apprentice rider. At the moment, I just got the two professional riders. And for me, I'm fine with that. But you got Delaware, you got the National, you got Philadelphia, you got all the racetracks on the East Coast. You got to go find mounts for the jockeys and pick them out of town and do whatever you can to do business with them. And keep everybody happy. That's the main thing.
Keep
That's the main thing in there.
Not an easy thing to do. And that has to be hard, too, because you do have to keep everyone happy. You don't want to make people mad whenever you have to ride someone else in a specific race. And how do you go about doing that, keeping those people happy when you've made other calls in the races?
Well, in the case, it doesn't work all the time, but, you know, if you got two riders, obviously, you say, well, have this rider, but if you don't like this rider, you can have the other rider, or you can have that rider, and you have my backup rider. But you've got to see how they're going to take it. Some trainers, when they ask you for the call, they call it, you give me a call. The calls means that the trainer wants you to ride that horse, specifically that rider. He don't want you to ride another rider. He don't want you to have another rider on the horse. So once you give him a call to the trainer, you committed to ride that horse. Some trainers, yeah, they can have it a backup. But if you ride that horse, you got to ride that horse. If not, you don't want to ride the race. And that's the name of the business, you know. But sometimes another trainer would keep another horse that is better than that one. You got to find your way to around it to ride the horse. If you can, well, so be it. This always will be your next time.
It's not an easy job, Frank. I remember when I rode, I used to, you know, you can blame the agent when you're the jockey. Someone comes up to you, why aren't you riding my horse? I don't know. Talk to my agent.
But it's always happened like that because even the jockeys, you know, I just tell them the same thing just by living on the agent because the agent is a support behind the rider for those cases. And but in the meantime, we have to like the business matters of the jockeys and all the personal matters because we agents in and out the racetrack. In other words, outside the racetrack, my rider asked me to do something for them. Hey, I got to work for that guy. He tells me to do something. I got to do it no matter what, you know, because that's why I get paid. And it's like any business agent, you know, in any sport, it's almost the same thing. And it's a good business. I like what I do, and I like to be in mobile racing and totally for the riders because, you know, I was a rider myself. And I used to have agents, but I see the business in a different view now that I'm an agent myself. And I always help the riders whatever I can. I'll definitely help them, you know.
Do you think it must help you that you used to ride, now you're an agent, so you've been on the other side of the fence where you had an agent, and I would assume that now that you are an agent, you would be especially cautious with riding particular horses. You have to be very concerned with your rider's safety, and you know where they're coming from, so that has to help.
Yeah, I'm glad you touched that, safety. Oh, safety is always going to be first in this business, especially in the track, you know, with the horses and the jockeys and everything, the gate, the paddock, everywhere. And then we have to definitely, you know, get the best horse on the rider. But you never know in this business, you know, like I said earlier, a horse can break in front of you and you're behind and you can't avoid it. You got to go with the horse too. And you don't want that to happen. But, you know, that's the business. But safety is always first, and in my opinion, we always do good for the riders and best for the business, too.
Jockey Frank Douglas is joining me on Jock Talk, presented by Tito's Handmade Vodka, right here on the Horse Racing Radio Network. So, Frank, I would assume that your wife, Pam, was very, very relieved when you said that you would not be riding anymore and you would be an agent, because she's been around for all of the injuries and all of the ups and downs that come with being a rider. And she's the most wonderful person I've probably ever met. And tell us how you guys met.
Thank you very much for that. My wife, she is a very wonderful person. Believe it or not, I met her at the racetrack Pimlico. She was working in the gift shop. And when I met her, I thought that was, you know, I was going to ask her for a date, but I thought she was never going to look my way and ask her to eat. And she said, well, you want to go to dinner? I said, sure. And after that, well, you know, we did it for a year or two, and then I popped the question and said, I would like to marry you. And she says, okay, let's get married. I took her to Panama, and we had a great time, and we had two wonderful kids, and my son just got married last year. And my daughter, Monica, she's a big dancer in California. She lives over there, and she's always with the big dance with the Stars, and she's done a few videos with Daddy Yankee and then a couple other people. She was in WrestleMania with Pitbull, and I'm very happy for her. She had done something with the dancing career. My son is a manager at the Holiday Inn, and they got married last year. Him and Amanda, his wife, are wonderful people, and they put a house close by us, so at least we can see them, you know, and then, you know, like twice a month or something like that. But I'm very happy for Pam. You know, she'll nice, just me and her, and we're happy like we used to be single, you know, it's just me and her. The kids are gone, and they still are. We all talk every day, you know, this and that. But and she's always told me, say, when are you gonna retire? I said, well, it's not time yet. Well, when I had the accident and the ankle, I'm like, I think it's time for something to move on and be a jockey agent. And I'm happy that I did that. But like I said, it's difficult to move out and says, you know, I don't want to ride no more, because you're always in the blood that you want to ride. But yeah, it's very difficult to do that. So that's what I do now.
That's what you do now, Frank. And I know a little bit about what that's like when I first retired and I would watch the races, and it's like, gosh, you want to be out there, but you know that you shouldn't, and it's time to move on to something else. But it is definitely a hard transition to go through whenever we mentioned you have to love it so much to do it, because it is so dangerous and it is so hard that when you walk away, when you're forced to walk away, it's definitely hard. But you have great things going for you, Frank. Great things going for you. I find it funny. Your kids did not follow in your footsteps. They did not go to the racetrack.
I tried at the beginning. My kids went to the track, and when I had my accident at the mountain, they weren't there. And it was a little shocking for them because they were young. And then my wife decided not to come to the track. And I don't blame them. But at the beginning, I tried to get my son, but my son got tall, and my wife is tall, so it wasn't going to happen. My daughter is my size. She was tiny. But when she was young, she was doing the dancing and the ballet and the gymnastics. And my wife said, forget it. She's not going to be a jockey, so don't even think about it. But I'm very happy that she's doing what she's doing. And she's very successful. And Pam, you know, she's working. She got a good job. And just me as an agent, so we're both happy here. And, you know, at least we're doing something that is safe, to put it that way. At least I'm not riding anymore, and she's happy with that. So that's a good thing.
Frank, I want to know where your daughter got her dancing skills from. Did she inherit that from you?
Well, I danced back in the day, but, you know, I still dance a little bit. But she, for some reason, she went to college. She went to Penn State University to study for law, and it's just going to continue. But then, because she was a dancer at the football games and all this and that. And I said, Dad, I want to go to California. I said, well, what happened to all this stuff that we paid to study in Penn State and all that? And she said, well, Dad, that can come later, but I'm young and I want to dance. And she ended up hooking up with a good agent over there. And he's booking very, very good deals with her, at least, you know, riding with the... She about 4 years ago, she performed with Prince at in the Superdome, Louisiana, and I was like, unbelievable. I couldn't believe she was with Prince back in the day, and then she the people with the WrestleMania and Justin Bieber and all these guys, and I'm like, well, again, and eventually, you know, she wants to get like a tour with one of the big stars, And I thought, I said, well, that takes time, you know, because you want to do what she's doing. She got to be in California. So, and she likes it over there. She's been over there 4 years. And like I said, she's making good money. And hopefully one day she gets something bigger than that. But then again, it's like a jockey, you know. You finish your career, you got to think about something else. Because she wants to end up doing teaching, dancing. That's going to be her trade, and that's what she wants to do eventually. So we'll see what happens.
She is so talented. Performing with Prince, that's quite the accomplishment. My gosh.
That was very nice. Back in 2013, he was in Superdome, the chorus. Well, obviously, you got to go to auditions and everything. And she told me, said, Dad, we didn't know who you were dancing with. And all of a sudden, we saw this little guy walking in the jostle, and it was him because, you know, he's little. He was wearing high heels, like a big shoes, for him to be a little taller. But the guy was all business, and, you know, fortunately, he's not around no more. But when she met him, he didn't say too much. He just wanted to get things done and dance and get it over with. You know, those people, they want to do the show and get out. They don't want to talk. They don't want to say nothing. So, but she was very happy, and she got experience, and she got that in the resume, you know, so that's the main thing.
Well, and, Frank, we are almost out of time. I cannot believe how fast this past hour went by. But, hey, listen, Frank, we need to talk about that comeback. You need to take my book.
No, you're doing a good job.
Frank, it's always a pleasure talking to you, sir, and wishing you all the best with Horacio Caramanos, with Kevin Gomez. You guys keep doing what you're doing.
Thank you very much.
Folks, if you missed any portion of tonight's show, you can check out our website, horseracingradio.net, and Horse Racing Radio Network on iTunes. And while you're there, check out all of the other great shows you can listen to. Don't forget, join me and the Big A, Anthony Stabile, tomorrow at 3 o'clock Eastern Time. We will bring you 3 hours of live racing coverage right here on the Horse Racing Radio Network. And join me next Tuesday at 6 o'clock Eastern Time with another edition of Jock Talk presented by Tito's Handmade Vodka. For our producer, Lee Dallapina, I'm Christina McManigal. Thank you for listening.